Hey, plotters, it's Jen. Thank you so much for your patience in waiting for December 2020's Shocked Talk episode. It is finally here. I'd like to pass on a really quick note here from Sean and Madeline that they're really sorry their dogs really wanted to contribute to this episode, so you'll hear them in the background every once in a while, but mostly just in the first 5 minutes or so. And with that, wait no longer, here is Shock Talk with their Santa Claus Conquers the Martians episode. Hi, welcome back to the third edition of Shocked Talk, the after-podcast party you didn't know you didn't need.
You got it right!
Thanks. I'm Sean.
I'm Maddie.
And today we're going to be talking about Abraham's favorite Christmas movie. Do you know what that is? Go ahead, guess.
Santa versus the Martians.
Santa conquers the Martians. Yeah. So we're just going to break right into this. It's going to be a little bit long, but hopefully it'll be fun.
Meh.
So if you listen to the podcast, they were going to ask me to do something really crappy this time. They were going to ask me to actually find out how much stock footage was used in the movie.
How much stock footage was used in the movie?
All right, so I watched the movie on the YouTubes, and I took out my stopwatch app on my phone. And according to that, I just turned it on every time there was stock footage, like military planes. I did. But don't call me a liar. I can see your face, your lips move. This is... I can see you. This is video in my eyes. So the film used approximately 174 seconds of stock footage.
Seconds?
Seconds. That means it's roughly about 2 minutes and 54 seconds.
That's not a lot.
In a film of 81 minutes, which is 4,860 seconds for those of you keeping count, that means 3.7% of the film was film stock. So that's right. 2% of Santa Claus versus the Martians was in Doctor Strangelove. All right. Naomi and Jen talked about this, about Santa Claus Conquers the Martians as sort of being like an allegory for race relations and classism. And they said it was based on a story by a guy named Glenville Merritt. And I couldn't find the story online. I guess it wasn't a book. I guess it was just like one of those conceived of kind of things. Like, I did find him on Internet Movie Database. And apparently he wrote... He's listed as a writer for Santa Claus Conquers the Martians and a writer for Santa Claus Conquers the Martians remake, which, according to Internet Movie Database, is a scheduled release date of December 17th, 2021. There is an official Facebook company page for this at It's Anti-Martian, I-T-S-A-N-T-I. M-A-R-T-I-A-N. It's the Diaz Brothers Production Company, and it looks like it might be animated.
Okay.
So the book that Naomi was thinking about, though, about the birds with the stars on their chests.
Dr. Seuss, the Sneetches.
Yep, it was called The Sneetches and Other Stories.
Yes, yeah. The Sneetches. Some Sneetches have stars, and others don't. And then they go through the machine, and then the Sneetches... that have stars think that they're better. And so then everybody gets stars.
You get a gold star from me.
Can I
put it on your stomach?
Then some of them go and have the stars removed to make themselves special.
To the way they were.
Yes, stars on theirs.
Looks like there is a remake coming out. I will tell you, I tried really hard to find any music from the musical versions as discussed by Jen. I couldn't find any on YouTube. All I could find was recordings of staged productions. There was actually a quarantine staged reading of this. It was actually kind of funny because the guy that played Vormo, the villain, he had an app on his Zoom that had a little mustache appear on it. Because in case you were wondering, there is a really annoying theme song to this.
You're not
going to
sing it, are you?
No. By this point, I've already edited it into the beginning, and they've already heard it. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Naomi did ask, and I am replying, that Earth Girls Are Easy was a song recorded by Julie Brown, who was also the hairstylist in the movie Earth Girls Are Easy.
It was a fantastic movie.
It was. It was earlier done by this very podcast.
And we don't want to get that Julie Brown mixed up with Downtown Julie Brown. Because they are two different people.
They are two separate people.
Yes.
It's like saying Davy Jones is Davy Jones. But one is my man crush David Bowie, and the other one is the lead singer of the Monkees.
Hey, we're the Monkees. People say we monkey around.
You know, do you feel old that like people that like are out of high school have no idea what we're talking about?
Yeah, actually, I do.
All right, yeah. Cool. So Naomi said that she was a villain in a school Christmas play. So I pulled up this little tidbit.
Okay.
Santa Claus, the movie, in 1985, John Lithgow played an evil toy maker who wanted to create Christmas 2 in March and used magic to create unsafe flying candy canes.
I remember that movie.
That kids would eat and then explode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Officially, Naomi said it. I'm gonna point it out. Sean Fax was created. The origin of Sean Fax was hatched because I was frustrated that Naomi kept calling Ernest Scared Stupid as Ernest Saves Halloween. And clearly, Ernest Saves Christmas is a better movie. And I was just annoyed that Ernest Scared Stupid was not being said correctly. So I called her up and said, hey, would you like someone to fact check your things? And she's like, that would be awesome. And then I got roped into doing this. And then I kind of pulled Maddie into it because I think that we work really well together.
Well, you know, we've been working together for 20 some odd years. So.
A quarter of a century. So I'm going to move on now. Jen and Naomi and Lydia talked about the misspelling of the word costume in the credits. The costume designer.
Oh.
So I got on Internet Movie Database and found some other misspelled credits. Apparently in 1965, there was a movie called Attack of the Eye Creatures. However, when the title came up, it said Attack of the, had a big eye in the middle, and said The Eye Creatures.
Attack of the Eye, The Eye Creatures?
No, Attack of the Eye Creatures.
Oh,
yeah, if you've seen it, it was actually an episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000, which, sidebar, I was watching that when I was in high school.
Of course you were.
And my mom came in and said, hey, I've seen that movie.
Of course she has.
And I'm like, really? She goes, yeah, I saw it at the drive-in back in Ryder, North Dakota.
North Dakota.
North Dakota. So, yeah. There is an Angel Heart, which is a movie from 1987 starring Robert De Niro. Okay. It says X-Ras casting.
Oh.
X-Ras. Mm-hmm. Earth versus the Spider in 1958. One of the title cards said starring. I actually tried to write it down here, but spell checks auto-corrected. Yeah, should be three R's.
Mm.
Dr. Strangelove in 1964. Again, another Dr. Strangelove reference. Apparently, according to the end of the book, when it said this is based on fictitious characters and no real life people should be blah, 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 blah.
They're all movies.
Yeah. Yeah, this one said it was fictitious. Fictitious.
Fictitious.
The Breakfast Club in 1985 wanted to thank the Illinois Film Commission. Snatch in 2000 wanted to give credits to a whole bunch of Gyp Spy kids. This one was actually on a lot of lists. Apparently, in 1966, a low B film producer decided to make a parody of Batman and Robin called Rat Fink and Boo Boo, but the title cards got misspelled and the movie title ended up being called Rat Fink a Boo Boo. Which confused people even more because that doesn't make any sense at all.
Hey, Boo Boo!
And lastly, Dumb and Dumber, I mean, I know it was in the movie, the credits say it was produced, directed, and root. Because, you know, they're not very smart.
No.
All right. So I decided to look this one up. In the movie, Santa Claus learns that the elves had made a rocket that flies on real rocket fuel. And Jen wanted to know, you know, would that be expensive? How would that work? So I looked up on an MIT student's webpage.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. And I found that to launch a 5-kilogram rocket, it would cost, into space, would cost $46,560 in rocket fuel. This is based on prices of liquid oxygen and hydrogen from the U.S. military.
But is that today's money?
That is today's money.
So it would have been a little less back then.
Back then, but
still a lot.
Yeah. This actually includes shipping, but not handling. And it's only available from the military in quantities. So
the Martians would have to get jobs and then save up their money and then go to the military and buy the rocket fuel.
In the movie, it was a toy for a kid. So it assumed that the parents would have to buy rocket fuel for it.
Oh, so it was a toy.
It was a toy, yeah.
That much for rocket fuel for a toy?
To launch a 5-kilogram rocket.
I'm American. I don't know what that is.
5 kilograms, roughly about maybe 15 pounds.
Oh, that's heavy. I mean, 15 pounds. That's a big-ass toy to give to a kid.
I looked up alternate names for Mrs. Claus, and apparently, according to the interwebs,
it's 11 pounds.
Okay, it's 11 pounds. Alternate first names for Mrs. Claus vary depending on the source material.
Okay.
However, Mary, Jessica, Maya, Martha,
this reminds Anwin, me of the song.
Layla, and or Goody were all names for Mrs. Claus at one point, first names.
Reminds me of Mambo number 5.
A little bit of Mary in my claws, a little bit of Jessica in my North Pole, a little bit of Maya is my elf. So in the movie, they had a tickle ray, which tickled people up. I was going to talk about the sleep spray they used to put their kids to sleep. And I was going to look up like penalties for dosing your kids with alcohol and Benadryl to put them to sleep. But that was way too sad.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to get, you know, the NSA involved with you looking up stuff you shouldn't be looking up.
I've already looked up rocket fuel.
Yeah. So.
All right. So they had a tickle ray. And Naomi said it reminded her of a movie. So I looked up the movie, and it is Orgasmo from 1997.
Which you've made me watch.
I have made you watch. A quick synopsis, if you will. Joe Young is a Mormon missionary, Trey Parker, serving his mission in Los Angeles and needing money to marry his girlfriend back home in Utah. This leads him to go to a porn set where filmmaker Max Orbison casts an unwitting Joe as a masked superhero named Orgasmo in his films. The film becomes a surprise mega hit, even in the mainstream, but soon Joe discovers Max is a criminal with sinister plans, so Joe and Ben become real superheroes to combat the evil director. Or maybe Ben's the small guy, Chode Boy. Chode Boy and Orgasmo. I forget.
Probably for the best.
Pop! I'm going to add in some Seinfeld music here.
Oh, okay.
What is the deal with Christmas music? What do you think elves like? What kind of Christmas music do you think elves like? Rap music.
Boo!
That's right. I'm doing bad Santa jokes. How can Santa deliver presents during a thunderstorm? Because his sleigh is driven by reindeer.
What are you doing? What do you call a snowman with a six-pack? The abominable snowman.
Dum-ba-dum-bum.
What's red and white and falls down chimneys? A Santa klutz.
Why are Christmas trees so fond of the past? Because the presents beneath them.
Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah. That is dumb Christmas jokes for your listening approval. So I decided to do some more math because math is fun for me.
Nerd.
So I looked online and found that a Mars day is 24 hours, 39 minutes. A Mars year is 687 days. So I did the math. I multiplied 24 hours by 60 to get the amount of minutes. Okay. Then I added those, and then I multiplied those minutes by 687 days to get the total minutes in a year.
Okay.
Then I added the 39 minutes times 687 days to get the total minutes in a complete Martian year.
All right.
Then I divided that by 365 days, which I divided by 24, which I divided by 60. And anyway, with a little bit of math in there, turns out that one Martian year equals 1.933 Earth years. So approximately two. Therefore, an 8-year-old Martian would be a 15-and-a-half-year-old teenager on Earth. And a 10-year-old Martian would be slightly over the age of 19. So there's the math for you. Finally, on a personal note, I would like to take this time to put a controversy to rest. Linguistically speaking, Santa is not anything related to Satan. There is no great conspiracy out there to equate the two, because Santa is actually Spanish for saint. His original name was Saint Nicholas. Satan, however, is a Persian word for a specific devil. So therefore, it's different languages, different phonetics, different everything. It is not a purposeful anagram and means absolutely nothing.
Good to know.
We here at Shock Talk are big nerds.
Yeah.
And when Shocked and Applaud reference Red Dwarf a lot, our favorite British TV show, at least my favorite British TV
Red
show.
Dwarf.
Yeah, it was your Downton Abbey.
No, that's not my favorite British TV show.
Mm.
It's Great British Bake Off.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. We decided that we would give you guys a brief synopsis of the TV show.
A page is not a brief synopsis.
I'm going to let Maddie here read you what the TV show Red Dwarf on a British broadcasting company is.
Okay. The main setting of the series is the eponymous mining spaceship Red Dwarf. In the first episode, set sometime in the late 21st century, an onboard radiation leak kills everyone except lowest-ranking technician Dave Lister, who is in suspended animation at the time as punishment for smuggling a cat on board ship. Said cat, Frankenstein, who is revealed to be pregnant, is safe in the cargo hold. Following the accident, the ship's computer, Holly, keeps Lister in stasis until the radiation returns to normal levels, a process that takes 3 million years. Lister therefore emerges as the last human being in the universe, but not alone on board the ship. His former bunkmate and immediate superior, Arnold Judas Rimmer, a character plagued by failure, is resurrected by Holly as a hologram to keep Lister sane. They are joined by a creature known only as Cat, the last member of a race of humanoid felines that evolved in the ship's hold from Lister's pregnant cat during the 3 million years that Lister was in stasis.
That's the show. There's apparently 9 seasons, and we could go over that if you wanted to, but I'm done. I'm done with that. So I'm going to move on.
I'm going to eat you, little fishy.
I'm going to eat you, little fishy. I tried really hard to look up what the name of the little Captain Crunch bits in Captain Crunch are called. But I think the closest I could come was barrels, maybe.
Okay.
I found some very interesting Captain Crunch facts. In 1971, a former Air Force electronics technician named John Draper, nicknamed Captain Crunch, was informed by his phone freak friend Joe that a toy whistle at the time packaged in boxes of Captain Crunch cereal could easily be modified to emit a tone at precisely 2,600 hertz, the same frequency that was used by AT&T long lines to indicate that a trunk line was ready to route a new call. This would effectively disconnect one end of the trunk, allowing the still connected side to enter an operator mode. This resulted in, among other things, the ability to place free phone calls anywhere in the world and operator-like control over the phone system.
So they hacked the phone?
Experimenting with the whistle inspired Draper to build blue boxes capable of reproducing the sound after being featured under his pseudonym of Captain Crunch in the October 71 issue of Esquire magazine. He was arrested and sentenced in 1972 to 5 years probation for toll fraud. But yes, he hacked the phone system with a toy whistle that was in a box of Captain Crunch. The other one that I kind of enjoyed because they were talking about crunch berries was in May 21st, 2009, Judge Morrison England of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of California dismissed the case of Sugawara versus PepsiCo. The plaintiff, Janine Sugawara, claimed she had purchased the cereal Captain Crunch with crunch berries because she believed crunch berries indicated that she was eating real fruit.
Oh my God.
Sugawara alleged that after 4 years of purchasing the product, she'd only recently discovered, to her dismay, that the berries were in fact simply brightly colored cereal balls. The judge commented, in this case, it is simply impossible for the plaintiff to file an amended complaint stating a claim based upon these facts. The survival of the instant claim would require this court to ignore all concepts of personal responsibility and common sense. The court has no intention of allowing this to happen.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
And thus, we became a litigious society.
All right. My last fact that I have here is Naomi mentioned Chekhov's gun or Chekhov's airlock. Every movie I've ever seen, every time there's an airlock mentioned, someone does get yeeted out of it at one point. There is some yeeting where they need to go out of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, what's the point of having an airlock if you don't yeet somebody out of it?
I mean, James Bond did it. Austin Powers did it.
Star Trek, Star Wars.
Aliens did it.
Even Marvel did it because Spider-Boy was like, hey, have you seen this classic movie, Aliens?
Well, that wasn't an airlock, but...
Doesn't matter. They yeeted somebody.
So Chekhov's gun is a dramatic principle by renowned playwright Anton Chekhov that states...
I thought he was on Star Trek.
Nope. That states every element in a story must be necessary and irrelevant elements should be removed. Elements should not appear to make false promises by never coming into play. He wrote... Remove everything that has no relevance to the story. If you say in the first chapter that there is a rifle hanging on the wall, in the second or third chapter, it absolutely must go off. If it's not going to be fired, it shouldn't be hanging there.
So why have an airlock if you're not going to use it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you point it out, you're going to use it.
Yeah.
Finally, today, we're going to go... We didn't have any new reviews to read for you, but we do have a rather nice email, which... While it doesn't actually reference the podcast, I'm going to have Maddie read just to prove that if you do send your emails to shockedandapplaud@gmail.com, we will read them on air.
Hi there. My name is Nick, and a while back, I stumbled across a movie I had never heard of. It completely blew me away, and so ever since, I've been desperately trying to convince everyone across movie fandom to give it a shot, and hopefully drag out of complete obscurity. The movie is called The Beast of War, a.k.a. The Beast, from 1988. Directed by Kevin Reynolds, starring George DeSunza, Jason Patrick, and Stephen Bauer. It was only released in two screens across the whole of the U.S. by Columbia Pictures. And I kid you not when I say this is the best Hollywood film you've never heard of. Quentin Tarantino's old writing partner Roger Avery has it down as the best movie of 1988 on Letterboxd. And he also has it down as one of his 20 desert island films, with Apocalypse Now being the only other war film. The film has a rating of 7.3 on IMDb, 3.5 on Letterboxd, but not a single critic's review on Rotten Tomatoes. But it does have an audience score of 84%.
a couple podcasts that have reviewed it and favorably, War Horse versus War Machine and the Retro Movie Geeks podcast, the latter on the basis of my recommendation. I continue to pester Criterion to do something to save this movie from continual obscurity, but I no longer get anything back from them. Oh well, please seek this film out. It's available on DVD and streaming, so it won't be difficult to track down. And if you do see it, let me know if you agree with me that this might be one of the 10 best American movies of the 1980s. One way or another, we need to find a way to raise this movie's profile and prevent it from continual obscurity once and for all. Just check out the trailer. Thank you. Again, the movie is The Beast from 1988, directed by Kevin Reynolds.
Wow.
Watch it.
Who knew Jason Patrick had an email address account? He was the guy that replaced Keanu Reeves on Speed 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are you trying to say that this is him promoting his own movie?
I was trying to say that, oh. Yeah.
Mm. Well, that's rude.
And speaking of rude, that's our time, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Shock Talk from all of us here, Sean.
And Maddie.
And our dogs, which we hope weren't too loud.
Yeah, Vespa and Tyrion.
Have a good night.
Unless it's afternoon when you're listening to this. Hey, and Tyrion, C-L-A-U-S-R-A.